Welcome to episode 2 of Making the Podium, a fortnightly podcast for ambitious, bold, and daring business owners, entrepreneurs, and marketing professionals who want to be at the cutting edge of innovation in the sports, health, and well-being industries. At first glance, the concept of single-handedly increasing footfall to a shopping centre by 22% is a daunting prospect. Compound that with a strategy to entice people to go trampolining by accident, and you'll confuse many entrepreneurs. But locating your company's first trampoline park in a shopping centre was no accident. It was the start of a leisure revolution. I'm joined on today's podcast by Gravity's co-founder, Michael Harrison, who explains how their unique service offering led to an initial influx of visitors and initiated collaborations with Nando's, Pizza Express, and many other national food and beverage and retail brands. With a new centre in London imminent, boasting state-of-the-art multifaceted facilities, Michael shares the values and decisions that set Gravity on a stellar trajectory, including the importance of a rounded marketing message across multiple platforms. I really hope you enjoy the episode. If you do, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and don't forget to subscribe. Or if you'd like to learn more about what we do at Topodium Group, head over to our website, topodiumgroup.com. Welcome to Making the Podium. Let's do this. So my guest today is an innovator in the world of active entertainment. As co-founder and chief operating officer at Gravity, he is revolutionising the way leisure is operated on the high street and leading the way with how active entertainment is enhancing the current decline in retail experience. Thank you for joining me and welcome to Making the Podium, Michael Harrison.
My pleasure, Chris. Thank you for having me.
So let's get straight to it. I'd like to start by rewinding a few years to a young Michael Harrison. Has sport and activity always been a big part of your life? And what was your early journey like before you entered the world of business?
Well, I was sort of born into business, Chris. I was born into a traveling funfair. And when you say let's go back to the early years, I'll take you really early. I was born into a traveling funfair. And the family, we traveled up and down the UK, opening at various fairs and then settling in the winter times. Schooling was difficult at the time, obviously. When you're traveling the fair, you don't really go that often. We'd get the time in the winter. And then at the age of 12, we settled down at a small seaside town up in Yorkshire. We settled there and you know, it was time to go to work. So I left school at the age of 12 and worked in the family business. And the family business started off as a carousel ride, and two, then three. And then we had a small theme park, restaurant, bar. It grew year on year. Anything to do with leisure in this small Yorkshire town, you know, we did. So it was a real learning curve. And with not being at school, you know, I grew up pretty quickly. Alongside that, I was an avid rugby player and ended up playing a couple of seasons out in New Zealand, where I broke my back, and that was the end of that game as well. So yeah, work has always been my focal point. And to a degree, there isn't much I don't know about leisure. You know, although it was in that one town in the family business, it really did cross every aspect. And when you have those short seasons, it's so important that you really do maximize your marketing and your offering. And make sure you can squeeze every penny out of that short season. And it's good. You know, it's been a huge part of my life. And you know, my father and that business has really, really set me on the way to bigger things.
I was going to say, so from an entrepreneur perspective, was it in you because it was part of the family? Or was it something that you kind of learned as you went along, do you think?
I think entrepreneurism is something that is in you. It is in you. You know, at the age of 13, 14, when we was closed down at the seafront, you know, I would go and buy a container load of yo-yos and sell them in the streets. I've always worked and always had the eye on business. So it is in you. And I think sometimes it's very easy for people to take some money and pretend to be an entrepreneur. If you've, you know, if you've got a real opportunity to have a go at something, entrepreneurism for me is it's just about hard work and following through and not stopping, really having a go at it. Mm.
And what would you say would be your early learnings? What have you learned from that role in the family business that you kind of, you know, jumped into age 12, what would be the key things that you use now and the learnings that you've gone, actually, I can relate that back to the early years?
Hard work and bloody-mindedness.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to be able to do the things that most people are not willing to do. You've got to be willing to get up an hour earlier and stay out an hour later and take that risk. And, you know, I've always done pretty well. You know, I've always worked hard, and we've had tough times, you know, we had bankruptcies and everything, but I've always maintained that I could go on the streets next week with nothing and I would come home with £500 in my pocket, because it is about going that extra mile and looking at the right opportunity and taking it. You know, the early years working, especially in that seaside town, where if you never had that money in by September 1st, you wasn't getting through the winter. Mm-hmm. It really was a real education. And once I left the family business, you know, my dad's still only 62 now, and he's a young 62. So it was always going to be his business, no matter how much I was running it. So once I decided I was going to leave that business and try and plug this huge gap that I see on the high street, once I arrived on the high street and the shopping mall, it was clear that there were so many pretenders out there. There were so many people who wasn't willing to get up that hour early and stay that hour later and take that extra risk. And the amount of people I see just opening the shutters and saying, okay, where's my customers? It was mind-blowing to me that, you know, tenants were almost so arrogant to expect that to happen and not willing to go out and get it or change the way they operate.
Yeah, no, really interesting. And I think from that, that's clearly in your blood. So fast forwarding now to your position as co-founder, chief operating officer at Gravity, you know, which is a fast growing chain of trampoline parks initially, and active entertainment facilities that you launched in 2014. Tell me a bit more about that business and the starting point of that journey.
Yeah, well, look, Gravity, it's the best thing I've ever done in business. And, you know, I go to work every day with my best friend, at his wedding. We've grown up together whilst we was down on the seafront in Bridlington with the waltzers and Dodgem rides. Harvey, his dad had the speedboats that in and out, the tourist speedboats in and out the harbour. So Right. We literally grew up together. And to this day, we still haven't had one argument. So it really is a special place to go to work every day. And when things do get tough, I often look around the board table and I say to them all, listen, this isn't selling ice cream in the winter. In Bridlington, we go to work in a nice warm office, and we're out there on the mall where people want to spend some money. So, you know, it's a fantastic job, and we're in this job with amazing people who are all passionate and love working for the company and want to see it grow. But we started this back in 2014. As I said earlier, I needed to get away from the family business and become my own man. And my best friend Harvey was sailing luxury yachts around the Caribbean with his wife, Tracy. And he said, look, we've been doing this 10 years. I want to come back to the UK. Would you like to go into business with us? Should we do something? And I said, yes, I'd love to. Let's have a look what's out there. And it was Harvey's wife, Tracy, who saw the trampoline parks in the States, and it was absolutely going off as it did in the UK.
Yeah.
So he says to me, you know, Tracy's seen these trampoline parks, they're all really busy. How are they doing in the UK? And I said, well, there isn't any. So we then started looking at it and realized that these spaces of probably 30,000 square feet was probably beyond, you know, two guys who had about £20,000 a piece to start a business up was probably going to be beyond us. And then Harvey said, look, I've got a friend who I've sailed with, great guy called Simon Wicker, ex-KPMG partner, lives out in Cayman. He said he'd love to do something with us as well. We floated the idea, and Gravity was born. So the three of us started this journey. We couldn't really afford, even with Simon on board, and Simon is a good friend, but also a very wily businessman. And he loaned the company enough money to just get us in the door as such. And, you know, at the time I was thinking, you've got tons of money. Why don't you throw a load at it? But I see his reasons now after all this time. And, you know, we couldn't afford to buy a trampoline park from a major manufacturer. So I went out to China and I went to the factory and I stayed out there for 2 weeks explaining what I wanted, to explain the, you know, the grade of steel they need to use and to make sure everything was safe and fire retardant and so on. And we came back with 4 container loads of steel. And then Harvey and I set about building this park in Escape, Yorkshire, in a unit that no one could make fit. And we built it. We hired the staff. I went on the tills. Harvey started as a court monitor. And it absolutely went off. You couldn't get a slot on that park for weeks, day and night, from 9 a.m. till 10 p.m., to the point where, in the end, we just used to have to unplug the phones because we couldn't cope. It absolutely went off. And the first year of trading at Escape Yorkshire, the only thing that had changed in that center was gravity. And the whole center's footfall increased by 22%. So on the back of that, we was then the landlord's blue-eyed boys. And of course, if they could increase footfall in a shopping center by 22%, the world was our oyster as such. So we started looking at other locations and quickly grew. You know, we had 4 parks open within the first 2 years. And at this point, we decided we was either going to stay at 4, take a comfortable living and be happy with what we'd achieved. Or we was going to go big and try and turn this company into a high street name. So at that point, Harvey and I and Simon, we went to the city to look for investment. And we ended up selling a percentage of the company for £8 million with Guinness Asset Management. And we grew quickly. The issue we had back in those days, the day we opened our 7th park, we opened 3 in real quick succession. About 100 other trampoline parks all opened within the same week before the summer holidays. And at this point, it was a case of if you had £1 million and a shed, there was a trampoline park going in there.
Yeah.
And all the growth just stopped because the travel distance and the catchment, it was just spread. You know, we had catchment of 50, 60 miles in the early days. This could then go down to 2 miles. But I always knew that marketing this business correctly, being in the right locations, would see us through this storm. And I know, you know, every other person in this country operating were looking at industrial units and they was following the American model. And, you know, an American industrial unit at the side of a 4-lane highway is much more attractive than one past the scabby dog over the railway lines in the UK.
Yeah.
So I didn't believe in that model whatsoever. And it just turned out that every operator in the UK was outbidding each other on industrial units while we was just concentrating on shopping centres. And those guys' rents ended up being more than what we was paying with, you know, 25 million footfall in a shopping mall. So we definitely made the right decision then. So it was a case of weathering a storm. We had 18 months, which were really tough, you know, really tough in the fact that they just so many parks opened. And one of the main points of this is that the trampolining, you know, if it's not done properly, if you're not running that facility properly and having the right staff, it can be dangerous. And there was no standard. There was no standard to say, this is how many people should be on your park. This is how many staff you should have. This is the equipment that you should be using. There was nothing there. So we started to put together with some of the other leading operators, the British Association of Trampoline Parks. And we created a British standard. And this thing, you know, quickly took hold of the old sector because there were some terrible operators out there. And this started to weed out some of the, you know, the poor operators, the unsafe operators. And it started getting to the point where the health and safety executives had this tool to use to go into a park and say, you're not up to standard. So at that point, they started to close as quickly as they opened. And, you know, the good remained. And, you know, I still think there's probably room for around 120 trampoline parks in the UK. It got up to about 240. And we're now down to around the 120 mark. So the millions that got lost in this industry was crazy. But again, it was poor operators who didn't know leisure, the marketing, or the operating around them.
And I'm interested to dig a little bit deeper into those, the earlier years where the market wasn't so saturated, and you know, going back to that first location you had that helped increase footfall by 22% in a retail environment. Was it the product? Was it the brand? Was it the fact that trampolining in the UK was new at that point in time? Was it a combination of those things? What do you think you could attribute to that early success?
Look, it was new to market. There's no two ways about it. It was new to market. And more people are bouncing now than ever before. There was just less parks back then. But at the same time, it was, you know, you do a lot of your marketing just by being on the mall. And, you know, you look at all those shops that you see on the mall, they don't invest massively on marketing. If they're in Blue Water Shopping Centre, for instance, and 28 people walking past their doors, that's marketing. It was only when the tough times come that we really needed to start to think about marketing this business. Because before that, you pretty much did just open your doors and people fell in.
So location was the key driver at that initial stage, that just being in the right place was enough to start off with.
Location was, but you know, a big factor of this is people sometimes accidentally go trampolining in one of our parks. You know, our pre-booking is around 35-40%, whereas a park on an industrial estate is probably 90-95%. So if you're on an industrial estate, no one's ever accidentally gone trampoline on an industrial estate. They're going there for a reason. If you're on the mall, people accidentally go. And it was at this point, from the beginning, I knew we couldn't be a one-trick pony. I knew that leisure was going to play a huge part on the high street. I never looked at these trampoline parks on the industrial estates as our competition. My competition was the Odeons and the Hollywood Bowls of the world. We was going to compete with these guys and offer something different. We was going to step outside of what we was comfortable with, and we was going to find other leisure activities, whether it be climbing, indoor go-karting, bowling, anything to do with that leisure industry, you know, e-gaming, FEC centres, we was going to bring together under one banner, whether that be in one big, huge box on a mall, or whether it be in four or five, and then we was going to produce a wristband which would allow the customer to get great value for money by being able to do four or five activities for a similar price to what they'd usually pay for one of those activities. And what I didn't want to do was become a problem for the mall. I didn't want to be this operator who just went into a box and paid its rent. I wanted to bring something to the mall. And I also wanted to bring something to the mall for the other operators, whether it be F&B or retail. I wanted them to be thankful that Gravity was part of that setup. Because if I can do that, then obviously the landlord's going to give us better locations, better capital contributions, and cheaper rents. So I made it my business to team up with all the high street F&B operators. We teamed up with Nando's, Frankie and Benny's, Ask, anyone on the high street on the same mall that we operated on. We offered children's parties in our unit. And for instance, you could book a Pizza Express party at Gravity. Pizza Express will deliver the food to us, to our kitchen. We will present it as a Pizza Express deal, and out it went. This was a massive game changer for not only the F&B operator, and you know, for instance, in Escape, we spend £150,000 a year with Pizza Express. And the city, you know, they've built bigger kitchens, have took on more staff. They just deliver the food up. We clear the restaurants of their kids, which they love, and we can sell a proper branded meal. The landlords love it. The landlords love it because what we are offering at that point is a leisure solution. Let's be honest. If the landlords could have retail and continue to charge retail rents, they would. Leisure is there to support the retail. Leisure is there to give the customer a different experience in shopping online. And this thing, you know, at first we used to beg Nando's and Pizza Express, would you please be part of this? Can you please deliver pizzas to us? Now we also have the wristbands where there's 20% off an ask or free drink at TGI Fridays. We have to put these restaurants on a rota to be part of what we're doing because they love to be part of it. You know, it does. It increases footfall and the spend per head at their units. So it was really about offering something on the mall that was new. And these are the things, that is the cross-marketing that really, really set Gravity aside from the rest. Because it's something that, for as long as Hollywood Bowl had been in this game, for as long as Odeon, they wasn't really looking at it. They wanted to keep everything they got in their own unit. And for me, it's quite short-sighted, because I can't offer a Nando's. I can't offer a Pizza Express. I can't offer, 32 shops all within my unit. Let's pull together as a shopping center. Let that pair want to go to Gravity because of everything else the shopping center's got to offer.
And I think that's really interesting, because as an entrepreneur myself, I look at that and go, there's some logic in that, a true partnership as opposed to a transaction, which I think is so common. Everyone's looking for the next sale, the next transaction. Whereas actually, if you think a little bit further ahead, you become more open to, true partnerships, which I think is exactly where you're going with that. But that takes someone else on the other side of the partnership to have an open mind. How did you find, what is for me quite disruptive in this retail sector in the malls, the responses from some of those organizations to start off with? And did you find that you had to really sell the concept and there was knockbacks because people weren't as open-minded as you at that point?
100%. Absolutely. And the first knockbacks came from landlords. We're not putting trampoline parks in these big units where we've been charging, £40 a square foot in rent. Just no. And after we'd got over that, it was a case of the restaurants also saying, we don't want to be associated with trampolines. And I get it in a way that, no one knew if this was a fad. We've been going now 6 years, and other than COVID, we were trading stronger than we've ever traded. So it's not a fad, it's here to stay. But what we couldn't do, we couldn't go and put some trampolines in a room and have a till and say, give me £10, go bounce. It had to be more. It had to be a strong brand. It had to be well-maintained. It had to be recognizable on the high street. The branding around Gravity is clean, it's crisp, it's something I'm passionate about getting right, and it develops. But Gravity is now recognized, not as a trampoline park, it's now Gravity Active Entertainment. And it was also important that we grew into all these other activities, because we are now a proper player on the high street. And any space that's coming up for leisure at the moment, Gravity are in there now looking at this through the landlord's eyes, before some of these big operators now, because they know that we look at the bigger picture. They know that we look at the F&B operators, how we can help their business. If we can help those guys, they can continue getting rents paid. And that's what we're about. And we're about to, this 2021 will see us come up with our new concepts, which I've been working on for some time now, which will see Gravity interact with retail partners like it's done with the F&B operators. Then we really are, looking at these shopping centers almost becoming indoor theme parks, because it's, if you can get a wristband on the kids and there's four or five activities where they can stay for the half-day excursion and the parents go away, go and have fun, leave me alone, I'm walking around the shops with your mum, and they can go all around the shops, they can meet outside one of the restaurants at 2 o'clock, all have some lunch together with the discount on the wristband and continue their day. We are going to change how the high street operates. And we've got designs up and down this country now for exactly that.
And I'd love to dig a little now into the Debenhams link that I know you're taking over a location down in London on that basis. And, you've coined almost a new part of the sector with this active entertainment, which I think is great. And I'm assuming that landlords are now starting to look at you and that concept as almost like the anchor tenant in some of these locations to go, actually, that's the draw, as opposed to some of the more conventional retail stores. Talk us through the concept, if you will, in the Debenhams converting into an active entertainment space.
As I've just said, I've been preaching this now for 5 years. I always knew this was our journey. For as hard as this pandemic's been for everyone, us included, what it's done is it has made the landlords stop and go, we need to do something different. And look, we are the guys that have been preaching this for 5-6 years. So we're the go-to company to solve some problems. And I say problems lightly, because I don't see it as a problem. I see it as an opportunity. And this is almost a changing of the guard. Big department stores, they have been struggling for some time. The idea of a big department store a new one opening now, it's pretty unrealistic. So the landlord has a choice. They can either push on and try and open these things, stay open with another big retailer, split the units up into 6 or 7 different shops, spend millions of pounds on it, and put more retail in what is probably already a saturated retail market, or they can come to Gravity. And not only will I take that space, not only will all the money not need spending on separating it, but I will increase footfall, I will increase dwell time, and I will increase catchment. And everyone else in that shopping centre will benefit from it. Again, this isn't untested. I've taken what's going on in America, and again, they're doing it different to how I'm going to do it in the UK. They are taking big 70, 80, 100,000 square foot boxes on the side of industrial units, and they are filling it with multi-use leisure. I want to take it to the next stage. I believe if you can take that concept and put it in a shopping center and everyone benefit from it, it's a much better day out for the parent, because they don't just have this 100,000 square foot box to be in. They have the rest of the shopping mall, which is probably where they want to be after a couple of hours in one of these spaces and your ears are bleeding. So it really is a great opportunity for us and the shopping centers. You know, the Wandsworth unit will be fully themed throughout. You know, this isn't, let's just have a go. This is as good as anything you would see at Warner Brothers. You know, you were walking off the high street and it's an 85,000 square foot unit. You will walk into a Tokyo City setting with indoor electric go-karting on a multi-height track. And I go back to the industrial unit where I said no one's ever accidentally gone trampolining on an industrial estate. No one has ever accidentally gone go-karting, ever. Because these things have only ever been able to be done over a huge industrial unit. What we've got now with the e-karting, for one, there's no petrol and all the restrictions that go with fire. But second, we've developed the track now where these still tracks can be banked and stacked. So where before you would have a 30,000 square foot track, we can now do a 30,000 square foot track on two levels in a 15,000 square foot space. So this now makes this more attractive, not only to look at and the driving experience is better, but from a commercial point of view, it now fits. So as you come into the unit in this Japanese drift racing experience, there's also some family cars on there as well, so you can take the kids on. There'll be a Japanese bar selling all Japanese beers and drinks. There'll be a Japanese noodle bar. Then you'll go up to the escalator into the FEC area. And this is one of the innovations that we're putting out there where we'll cross with retail. The FEC area, the Family Entertainment Center, traditionally children go in, they end up with reams and reams of tickets that they've won out of these prize machines, and then they'll swap them over the desk for a pencil or a teddy bear. We've taken it to the next level now, and we've been working with a US company who's developed the software and the app that goes alongside this. And you will go into the FEC area, you'll download the app, and your points will go onto the app. You will either be able to redeem these prizes in store and go to one of the local shops and get a shirt or a jumper or a burger, or you can go to Amazon, go and have it delivered directly to your house. The idea is to get people spending money with us, but obviously getting in and around the rest of the store. So that's just one of a number of ideas I've got this year for leisure and retail crossing over.
I'm interested to dive into two elements of that. The first being how you now market a multi-activity facility within a retail park. And then secondly, you know, on some of the technology pieces which you were talking about. So to start off with, how do you think your marketing of the brand, the facility, this amazing setup of different opportunities that a family could access is going to be different now versus the earlier days as a trampoline park?
Well, look, this really is new to market. So we will be marketing this as London's first active entertainment centre. There is going to be two bars, two restaurants, a Japanese-themed floor, a New York-themed floor. There is bowling, e-darts, e-gaming, live music stages, You know, it goes on and on. 18 holes adventure golf. And everything is digital. Everything is better than anything that's been done before. So the bowling alleys have a Spark technology on. So we don't want now the traditional bowling jock. This is family entertainment. And every lane is now projected on. So when you roll the ball, flames come up behind the ball. You know, it basically turned into a giant pinball machine. So the bumpers are up and they bounce off the side to collect points and the different targets, all through projection. And all this will all be collected in the data collected. And it's about the end user having something to remember their day and an experience to take away with them.
And I guess the app that you're creating is going to be that location to keep the data, to engage with the users, to provide them reasons to keep coming back. So it doesn't become a let's go once a month destination. It becomes a I'm going every week because there's so many things that I can do. And I've got this app which is helping me consolidate all of this, the technology and the games and the scoring and so on.
Absolutely. You know, it's every time you visit Gravit, it can be a different experience. You know, these games are constantly changing, for instance, on the bowling. You know, the e-darts, which are all controlled, all coming back to this app-based thing where you're collecting your own points. The end goal in this is to create an avatar for everyone that has all their points and all their scores and all their prizes all coming into one pot. And the biggest thing about this is that they can come all day and do this. But it's not in a theme park, which is cold and windy. It's not in a big box on an industrial estate. It's in a shopping centre or on the high street where families want to be. Parents are quite happy to say, okay, well, we've had an hour in here. We'll meet you back here at 2:00. We're going to have a walk around the shops and do something we like as well. So it really is about bringing these shopping centres together and getting this culture from a tenant in the past of opening the shutters and waiting for the customers to come in. We've got to go and get them. We've got to stop them just clicking on Amazon. We've got to get them to think, actually, we're going to go down to the shops and we're going to do this because we're going to kill 2 birds with 1 stone. We're going to have a day out, done my bit this weekend with the family. We've all had some fun and we've got the bits we're going to get online.
And how do you think you're going to get that message across? You know, if we look at the COVID effect from the last year where people haven't been allowed to go out, maybe are a bit more daunted about going out than they ever were. What type of marketing strategies are you going to be working on with the retailers, with the landlords to drive that new noise and that traffic back to an area that in some places is completely deadened over the last 12 months?
My marketing spend is going to increase massively. One, it's London. It costs more to market in London, obviously. But two, we've got a new message. We have to re-educate the customer into coming to, you know, for start at Southside Shopping Centre for fun. You know, it's not going to be a soulless place. It's going to have a lot of fun. So the whole point in this is it's how we market. And a key point of this is our experience. It really is, it's going to be all genres. So in the daytime, we're looking for the younger mums who's got the kids, or mums and dads have got kids who are going to bring these in through the day while, you know, the older kids are at school maybe, and be in a nice environment and look at some of these activities and feel it's a fun thing to do. Early tea time, the age group rises somewhat. And then come 8:00, the lights will go down, the music will go up, and this becomes a real young adult and night out. You know, this is an old adult, actually, because I'm moving on a little bit now, and it's certainly somewhere I want to be. So it really is, it's about it in all genres and going all the way through the day and evening. And from a corporate point of view, where else better than to get your team together and come and have a party to get everyone after this pandemic, you know, back into a team. I've looked at many ways of how we market this, and we are going to market to the 19-year-old people of Britain, because everyone younger than 19 wants to be 19. Everyone who's past 19 still wants to be 19. So that is a space we're targeting, because you can't market to everyone and sell what you're trying to sell efficiently without becoming confusing. So it's 19-year-olds we're looking for, and then everyone will want to come. That's my very simplistic way of marketing. And look, I believe I know a thing or two about marketing, and I think sometimes it does all get a bit complicated, and it's about sending out a simple message. And I've learned along the way. So, you know, I was on one of my sites yesterday. It was just too busy. There was just too much going on. And it's like, no, we need to pull all this back and we need to simplify the message.
I love that, reining it in, simplifying it for one audience that everyone else kind of has a connection to, which I think is really interesting. And there's so many interesting strategies around how you target that 19-year-old, you know, both on social, both digitally, and then in the retail space as well.
It really is, you know, we look at different marketing campaigns and how we're going to market. And I believe all marketing campaigns need to be rounded. You can't concentrate on one area market. You can't just concentrate on digital or social. It's got to be a rounded message. And you might get better results back from one than the other, but it's got to be a rounded message. It really has.
Yeah, I completely agree on that front. We talked previously in conversations around textbook marketing versus reality marketing. And do you think this is a prime example of actually the textbook goes a little out the window on this?
Yeah. Normal marketing, as far as I'm concerned, there's too many things in the world now to grab people's attention. I don't really think there's such thing as run-of-the-mill marketing anymore. Do you know what? I might rub some people up the wrong way about what I'm about to say, but what is the point in advertising on radio anymore? Unless you're advertising the weather, or unless you're the absolute first advert after a song. Because as soon as the adverts come on now, people's minds are everywhere else because there's so much. They're picking up a phone, they're calling someone. I'm the prime example of that. You don't listen to ads no more unless they absolutely grab you and pull you in. And, you know, there's lots of meerkats out there which do a fantastic job. You know, half of people listen to those ads don't even know what the marketing's about. But what they've got is they've hooked those people. And I do really love some of these campaigns that are out there. But it really is a fine line between going to grab them, doing guerrilla marketing and being annoying. That, you know, there is a line that gets crossed sometimes. And it's a real difficult one. And that's why we need marketing experts.
No, indeed. So let's fast forward now. Obviously, you're going to be launching Wandsworth. I'm sure there are plenty of other similar active entertainment spaces that you're going to be taking over in the years to come. 5 years' time, where's success for you and Gravity? And where do you see the sector moving?
It's going, the sector is going to be front and center to any successful retail destination. That is a fact. And that is something now that every major landlord has accepted. The next question is, how do you get that customer to go past a local bowling alley and come to the one in your centre? Well, I think I've answered that with the multi-ticket would do that. For Gravity in the next 5 years, we plan and we will do our best to open 100 venues. The opportunity that has been put in front of Gravity right now is incredible. And we're not just talking UK. We're building our first sites now in Germany. We're already open in Saudi Arabia. The second and third sites coming. There's a site in Oman being built, and there is literally interest from most countries of the world for Gravity. What Harvey and I and Simon decided was that we wasn't going to go and get £100 million worth of debt and go at this. You know, I've had debt in the past, and it does strangle us. We are looking for good partners. The opportunities are so vast in locations that are not available to new startup companies or to experience leisure companies as such. So the opportunity is there for us to grow our family from a franchise point of view. We'll still open corporate sites, but I am actively seeking good partners. And franchise companies don't usually work this way around. Usually they have franchisees, then they go out and look for a site. We have the best locations all over the world. I just need those partners from that area to come on board and be part of what we're doing. And, you know, we believe we would never take a location we didn't believe in. So Gravity signed that lease. Gravity even contribute, you know, $1 million, $2 million towards a build, the fit out of these things. We just need the partners to grow.
Understood. And I think the opportunities, you say, the change of the guard almost from conventional retail space into this active leisure hub almost, which becomes the center point for a community, but also a wider community, because people will come for miles to this type of environment, I think is huge. Just as we wrap up, I'd like to kind of encapsulate a few of the things that we've talked around. But for anyone starting off as an entrepreneur, thinking now because of COVID, for whatever reason, their job they've lost, they're now thinking of going it alone. What advice would you give to any potential startup in any sector, not just the leisure, that you would go, these are my top tips?
Look, my top tip is pretty simple. Work hard and have a go. Have a go. Because if you don't get out of that comfort zone, you will not achieve what you are setting out. You can't dip your toe into the water being an entrepreneur. You have to really have a go and bend the rules and make sure you are on the edge. We are on the edge with what we do. And believe me, as a true entrepreneur would sooner earn less money working for himself than earn more money working for someone else. And I love every single day I work, every single day, even during this current pandemic when it's costing me £14 a minute to even be around anywhere. £14 a minute, I love going to work. And right now, the time is for entrepreneurs, because we will come out of this pandemic. And when we do, it's going to be the roaring 20s. It will go off and people will spend on experience and on taking back their lives like never before.
I think that's great advice. And I think that's so inspiring to hear that for people that are, you know, thinking about starting a new job or that early stages, and that just getting out and doing it, you know, and giving it a go, I think is so, so true.
Look, it's been tough out there. It's been tough out there for everyone, you know, myself included. And the good times will come back. Keep strong. Keep going.
Completely agree. To finish off, I like to just fire a couple of quick fire questions. And these typically are one word answers that are top of mind for you.
One word answers from me, you'll do well.
Well, we'll see how we get on. So if you could sum gravity up in one word, what would it be?
Fun.
If your colleagues could use one word to describe you, what would it be?
Passionate.
Nice. If money was no object, what would you do tomorrow?
Go on holiday. No. Look. Yeah, go on holiday.
On a tech basis, if you had to survive a week with only one piece of technology, what would it be?
Phone, unfortunately. Although I will say I've made it when I don't need one.
Yes, I would agree with that. If you could shout out to one person in the industry that's helped or supported you the most, who would it be and why?
My father. Just the early years of, you know, which was pretty, it was a tough upbringing, but I still stand by the fact he's forgotten more than I know.
Great. What type of marketing hook gets you the most? How does someone get into your mind to buy something?
If it's something I've never seen before, if it's something I look and smile at, it's not about the information, the product, it can all come later. Just hook me. If you've hooked me, I'm interested.
And last one, apart from gravity, if you could invest in one company or brand you think is going to be huge in the next 5 years, who would it be?
It's a good one. You've got me there, Chris.
If it's not a brand or business, maybe a sector.
A sector. If it's going to be a sector, well, I think that the renewable energy, it's up there. I think anything that Elon Musk has got something to do with, you're not going to go far wrong, I don't think.
Got it. Look, Michael, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. I think there's been some really insightful elements of the conversation, particularly around this almost new sector that you are starting to define. I am super excited to get to Wandsworth when you open it. And I will definitely be in the Japanese noodle bar watching people zooming around on their e-carts. But look, really appreciate your time. Thank you ever so much. And thanks for joining Making the Podium.
It's my pleasure, Chris. Thanks for your time.
If you'd like to learn more about what we do at Topodium Group, head over to our website, topodiumgroup.com.